Create Your Own Life, Episode 28.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas, founder and host of EO Fire, and you're listening to the Create Your Own Life podcast with Jeremy Ryan Slate. Prepare to ignite.
This episode is also brought to you by HostGator. It's the best hosting platform out there and enables you to host all of your domains for less than $4 per month. It also includes email hosting, which if you're a bootstrapping entrepreneur is a must. Check out HostGator today at www.jeremyryanslate.com/hosting.
Hey, what is up, Life Creation Nation? Jeremy Ryan Slate here, and welcome to episode number 28 of the Create Your Own Life podcast. The show that gives you the business skills to either get you to that next level or really help you create the business that you really want to create. So everybody, I hope you have been enjoying the week with us thus far. We had Bob Berg with us on Monday. Friday, we have John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire coming at you. But today, very excited to have Mark Sanborn with us. He is a keynote speaker, and he has also worked with a number of Fortune 500 companies, showing them how to do things better. He deals mainly in leadership and setting up the correct leadership in order to really get people more productive and achieve what they really want to achieve. So if you are somebody that really wants to get your leadership to the next level and figure out what you have to do, then Mark is totally the guy that you want to check out. He is a best-selling author of several different books, including the Fred Factor series, which he's going to talk a little bit about today, as well as his book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. So I'm very excited to have Mark on the show today. And without further ado, our interview with Mark Sanborn. So Mark Sanborn, welcome to the Create Your Own Life podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. Great to be with you.
Awesome. So Mark, you're one of the best known sources on leadership. But could you take us a bit along what your personal journey looks like? You know, what kind of brought you to this point? And then we'll get a little bit more into, you know, what leadership is for you.
At a very young age, I got interested in public speaking, and it was really through public speaking that I started to pursue leadership opportunities. I believe in this crazy age of spin and hyperbole that leaders aren't just people that tell a better story, but that leaders make the story better. So whenever I say I got interested in leadership because of my ability to communicate, I never want to accidentally create the perception that because I was a really glib or clever communicator, I fooled people and got into leadership, because that communication skill is critically important. But if that's the only skill you have as a leader, you will not last long.
Sure.
So through leadership opportunities in youth organizations and later my professional association and my entrepreneurial efforts, I have always been a practitioner at some level. I've not been the CEO of a Fortune 100 company, so I would never make that claim. But I really believe that if you're going to write and speak about a topic, you need to have some direct experience. I think it adds depth and credibility.
Absolutely. Cool. So Mark, what is the Fred Factor? What did you take away from Fred Shea?
The Fred Factor is a book that has been my best-selling book. It sold about 2 million copies internationally. And it's a story about an extraordinary postal carrier who I met many, many years ago when I first moved to Denver. Now, the actual Fred Factor as a concept is the ability to turn ordinary into extraordinary and create new value for people through passion, creativity, and commitment. Because Fred Shea had what many people might consider kind of a dead-end job. I mean, he put mail in a box day after day. But he made it such artistry, and he brought so much professionalism and creativity to it that I was inspired to first start talking about him and then later write the book. And by the way, if your listeners want to read the first chapter of the book for free and really learn the story about Fred, they can go to fredfactor.com and download the first chapter for free. But Fred is now retired, but he continues to inspire me just through his enthusiasm for life and being of greater service to others.
Awesome. And what were you able to really use the Fred Factor to teach other people?
I wrote it as kind of a business or an organizational philosophy book. I think most people probably saw it as a customer service book.
Mm-hmm.
But the four principles of the book really apply not just to our professional lives, but to our personal lives as well. And the first is that everybody makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And this is an important principle that people think they've heard before, but chances are they really haven't. See, most of us grew up believing that you can make a difference. You know, your coach or your parents said, you know, you can make a positive difference. But what's interesting about that is it subtly suggests that you can choose not to make a difference, you know, that you can somehow opt out or be neutral. And what I'm saying in the Fred Factor is that everybody makes a difference. The only question is what kind. And if we aren't consciously trying to make a positive difference, chances are pretty good that the people around us think we're indifferent, you know, that they don't care, we're not engaged. And so I think we need to be intentional about choosing to make a positive difference whenever we can every day. The second principle is that it's all built on relationship, because what separates almost any business from another isn't just the quality of the product or the service or the experience, but the quality of the relationship that you have with the provider. And of course, relationship building is hard. You know, we're really not generally taught how to do it. And so whenever a client says to their employees, you know, build better relationships, I always ask the question, well, have you taught them how?
Exactly.
It's one thing to ask people to do something, and it's another to teach them how to do it. The third principle, it's really kind of my personal favorite, is that you can add value to anything you do, and it doesn't have to cost a nickel. It's about outthinking rather than outspending your competition. It's finding real creative ways to just add a little flourish, a little extra value, a little additional that people will remember and talk about and will cause them to come back for more. And then finally, the fourth principle is that every morning we have a choice, and that is to either replicate to do what we've always done the same way. And of course, that's really boring, or innovate and that we can reinvent ourselves every day. That's really the fourth principle, because if you're gonna be hot, you can't be burnt out. If you're going to be a high performer, you can't be sleepwalking through life. And it's the leader's responsibility ultimately to motivate him or herself. You may work for a company that does a good job of giving you incentives and training, but the reality is you have to take responsibility for your own motivation. It's an inside job. Really, nobody else can do it nearly as well for you as you can. And that's what the fourth principle is about. So I found all four of those principles to be applicable in literally every area of my personal and professional life. And based on the feedback I've gotten from a lot of people, it seems to be applicable to their lives as well.
Awesome. Well, I've heard lots of different stories, just to touch on principle three, from all different sorts of people. What do you see to be the most creative way that somebody's applied the third principle?
Well, it's about what I call the ABCD principle. And that is, when you do something, ask yourself, how can you go a little bit above and beyond the call of duty? I'll give you an example. I did a favor for somebody, sent me an email and said, thank you. And by the way, I just read a book I think you'd be interested in. And that was a nice gesture. But here's how I would apply ABCD. I might have said to myself, why don't I handwrite a note? Because that shows it's a little more time consuming, but it shows a little more intentionality and gratefulness. And why not, instead of suggest the book, why not order the book through Amazon and have it delivered? And in the note say, hey, thanks for your help. I really appreciate it. By the way, I'm sending you a book I hope you'll really enjoy. Now, in that particular instance, the additional cost might have been, you know, $15 or $20 for the cost of the book. But it's that little bit above and beyond the call of duty that people remember. Many years ago, the vice president of a national company was telling me about a car magazine. I'm a motorhead and cars and anything with an engine. And he was telling me about a magazine he liked to read that I'd never heard of before. So the next day, when he and I got together again, he brought me a pullout subscription card for the magazine to make it really easy for me, if I chose to subscribe to the magazine. So it's those little things that make such a big difference and really are memorable.
Wow. It's funny, because in the pre-show, you and I were talking about Robin Sharma, and he actually, I was trying to get him on the show, and it just wasn't the right time because he's a busy guy. And he sent me an autographed copy of his book, said, hey, enjoy this book, but let's, you know, try and touch base next year. So I totally see where you're coming from on that.
Well, Robin's a great friend and a great thinker and writer. And, you know, I appreciate him as well. He is a good example of a speaker and author who also practices what he teaches.
Absolutely. Well, let's get into your book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader, because all too often I work with people that really demand the title of a leader, and you see this a lot. You know, I'm the leader, I'm, you know, steering the ship, I'm telling people what to do, but they don't do any real leading. They do a lot of demanding. You know, how does one accomplish being a leader without a title?
There's really at least two kinds of leadership. What I call big L leadership, I mean, are people who have titles. You know, you see them on the org chart, they're a VP, they're a manager, they're a supervisor, and they have been formally charged with leading other people. Regrettably, having a title doesn't necessarily get people to follow you. Or if they do follow you, sometimes they do it out of fear and compliance rather than out of real commitment. Little L leaders are people who don't have any formal charge on the org chart or in their job description to lead others, but who recognize that just as having a title doesn't necessarily make you a leader, not having a title shouldn't prevent you from leading. Which begs the question, you know, really, what is leadership? Mm-hmm. And in my book, I define it at a very simple level, and that is leaders are those that make things better. We often think leadership is about leading others, and it certainly is often. But first, leadership is about leading ourselves, you know, being able to take responsibility for ourselves. Sometimes it's about leading the outcome of a project or a result, even if you're the only person who is responsible for that result. And then it's about influencing others. And we influence others by who we are and what we do far more than any title or status. You know, you can impress people. I say impressing people is a head game. It changes what they think of you, but really leaders influence. And that means that you change what people do. Influence is about behavior, not just about what people think.
Wow. Well, you've spoken about reflection in leadership a lot, and I think that's not something a lot of people spend enough time on. How does reflection make you a better leader?
I don't know who originally said it, but I love the quote that says, if you don't slow down, nothing good will ever catch you. And I think we live in such a time-compressed world that we've short-circuited our ability to learn. If you don't reflect on what happened and what you learned, you probably won't be able to extract a lesson from it. Reflection is about pausing long enough to think about the deeper meaning or the deeper implications of what's going on in your life. Reflection produces insight. You know, thinking produces activity. So I think that the key is to find a time, whether it's early in the morning or late at night or at lunch or when you take a break and walk in the park in the afternoon, to really think about, number one, what have I learned today or recently? And then another question that I think is paramount for leaders is the question, what am I accomplishing? Because I think too often people confuse activity with accomplishment. You know, activity is about how busy you are, but accomplishment's about what you're actually able to achieve. And paradoxically, we often achieve more of importance when we do less.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I was listening to an interview with you recently where you said that in the leadership publishing world, there's really been nothing new written in a long time. What principles would you base leadership on for somebody just kind of starting out, figuring out what they should be doing?
Well, I think principles never change. You know, context and application can change. Certainly, there's new technologies that we've never had before. But I think that you want to dig down and ask yourself, you know, what has made a leader great, not just today, but 200 years ago, and what will make a leader great 200 years from now. And that's really what I tried to focus on, at least my perspective, my conclusions in my book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. And I think that there are many different ways to talk about leadership. I like to talk about leadership based on what leaders do, not just traits or characteristics. Mm-hmm. If somebody says all leaders have great courage and commitment, that's helpful, but how do you develop courage and what does commitment look like at a practical level? You know, so I talk about things like self-mastery, you know, first taking responsibility for yourself. I talk about having power with people, not power over people, but having power with people. Certainly the ability to communicate well is important. What I call IQ, implementation quotient, that's about taking what you've learned and applying it. I think focus is key, but that the most overlooked part of leadership recently has probably been service, because I believe leaders are always of greater service. You know, if you accomplish something and you benefit from it, that's probably ambition, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But I think when a leader does something, there's a bigger benefit to either another person, a group, an organization, a community, or for that matter, a country. So principles are bedrocks. They're the things that never change. And the real question for a student of leadership is how do I apply these timeless truths in contemporary ways?
That is awesome, Mark. Wow. Awesome. So this is something I've asked a lot of people, and I'm really interested to get your viewpoint on it. What do you think is the most important trait of a leader?
I would always start with a question, and that is, why do you want to lead? Because motives matter. If you do not have a compelling reason to lead, the first time you bump into a difficulty or an obstacle, you'll become discouraged and ultimately give up. So I think that desire has to be based on a really deep and compelling purpose. Really, any significant accomplishment requires a compelling purpose. But for me, it's knowing why you want to lead, knowing why you lead, that really powers the skills that you then use to actually lead.
Awesome. Well, if you looked at today's modern business world, who do you think is the biggest leader in the business world modernly?
Oh, there's so many ways to define biggest or best. I really don't have any quantitative research. I know others will sometimes publish a list of the 10 best leaders in business. Some of the best leaders I know are from smaller companies that you wouldn't necessarily have read about, like my friend Court Dorkowski, who is at Trueline Industries in Kirtland, Ohio. And he's built a company that is just so innovative and dominant. By the way, they make fuel nozzles, as I understand, the technical product for jet engines. Mm. When I first met Kurt, he said something, he said something I'll never forget. He said, you know, most companies say, leave your problems at home. We say, bring your problems to work. Because if you have a problem at home, chances are it's going to impact your performance at work. And while they don't want to meddle, they do want to provide the resources and support that people need to solve their problems so that they're 100% at work and not distracted by things that are going on outside their professional lives. So if any listeners want to get some interesting insights into a very cool, very successful little company, Trueline, one word, Trueline Industries in Kirtland, Ohio, and the leadership there, Court's dad founded the company, Court's a leader, as well as their president, Stewart. That's a great company to study.
Awesome. Well, and this is just a reminder for our listeners. Any links that Mark mentions today will be linked up over in the show notes at jeremyryanslate.com. So if you're driving, if you're working out, don't freak out. You can definitely find it later. So, Mark, where do you see most people failing as leaders?
Well, I wrote an article, one of the most popular blogs I've ever written, based on some observations by an old friend named Ken Moffin, who's a psychotherapist who worked with high-performance individuals. And it's called Why Leaders Fail. We talked about kind of six categories. And if people would like to read that, they can go to marksanborn.com /blog and then Failure of Leadership. They'll be able to easily find it if they go to my blog. But there are six different reasons why leaders fail. But I think two of the biggest ones is they lose their passion or their enthusiasm for leading. That goes back to not having a really compelling reason why. Mm-hmm. And then I also think, and it wasn't in the original article per se, but I think entropy. Entropy is, of course, the second law of thermodynamics. And it says that everything is going from higher order to lower order, or it's degrading, you know, it's wearing out, it's running down. And I'm paraphrasing it.
Right.
You're a physicist, don't hold my feet to the fire. But what happens in leadership is the things that made us successful, we often don't stop doing them, because if we did, other people would notice. You know, they'd say, wow, Mark, I can't believe you no longer do that. So what happens instead is more insidious, and that is we just start doing them a little less and a little less and a little less. Hemingway, in one of his books, and the name of the book escapes me, one of the characters says to the other, how did you go broke? And the response was, at first very gradually and then suddenly. and that's really what entropy does. You know, you gradually stop doing the things that make you successful, and all of a sudden you're bankrupt behaviorally, or you're bankrupt in terms of the results that you create. So I'd ask myself, you know, what are the things that are continuing to keep me successful, and make sure that you don't lose sight of them and inadvertently suffer from that problem of entropy.
Awesome. Well, Mark, we're going to shift gears a little bit here, and I have some rapid fire questions for you. Out of all the projects you've worked on, what did you enjoy most?
The most interesting project, about 4 or 5 years ago, we built the office that we now occupy. I bought space, 2,500 square feet, in an office condo, and I worked with a general contractor and my wife and some other people to design and build an office. And I'm certainly no real estate developer, but I found it very gratifying to have nothing but concrete and glass, and then to have an image in my mind's eye of what I wanted the office to look like, and then a year later to be sitting in that office. So for me, the actual building and bricks and mortar of the office was a very gratifying project.
Oh, that's so cool. Awesome. So I find people are really interested in how successful people spend the first few hours of their day. Do you have a morning ritual?
I certainly do. I'm a very disciplined person. My ritual in the morning is kind of probably not what everyone would recommend. First of all, I have little tiny dogs. They're 5 pounds and they're comical. They're my herd, my dog herd. And every morning I feed those two pups. Then I come upstairs. I actually do my email in the morning. I have my filter set so that at most I'll maybe have 6 or 8 emails, personal or professional. I can get a quick sense of what's come in over the transom that night. Then I do some reading and studying and a little bit of meditation. Then I work out, because if I don't work out before things get busy, I realize by the end of the day I'm likely not to work out. So I have a belief that anything that you really have, I know you're a fitness fanatic, anything that you're really committed to, you need to do when you're at your most energetic. And believe it or not, I'm a morning person, so that's when I do it.
Awesome. And I guess this next question really shouldn't fall under rapid fire, but I just didn't really know where else to ask you. I listened to another interview with you, and I also read some stuff on your blog. I am a huge Lewis and Chesterton fan, and I heard you say that those would definitely be people you would want at a dinner party in one of the interviews. What's your favorite writing from Chesterton or Lewis?
Indeed. I'm a big fan of both. People sometimes say, who are your mentors? And I say, among others, two dead Brits. C.S. Lewis was an apologist, but he was also a great intellect and a professor of medieval studies. He wrote a great deal. But for me, one of the most stimulating books and one that really impacted my personal faith was Mere Christianity, which was based on a series of radio shows that he did and is probably, at least to American readers, the book he's most well known for. He wrote some wonderful science fiction. He wrote some great fantasy. He was a really broad intellect. It was just extraordinary how much he knew. He interestingly died on the same day that JF Kennedy was assassinated.
Wow.
So even though Lewis had recently been on the cover, I believe, of Time magazine, his passing went relatively unnoticed because it was overshadowed by that unfortunate assassination. G.K. Chesterton, for me, is a lot harder to understand, but fortunately, I've read a lot by the president of the Chesterton Foundation, a guy named Dale Alquist.
Oh, I know Dale.
You know Dale, yeah. I've had a chance to talk to Dale a little bit. I'm a big fan of his work, and the book that I would recommend for anybody that wants to really get into Chesterton and appreciate him quickly is Alquist's book, Common Sense 101. That's one of my favorites. Again, I've read a lot of what Chesterton wrote, both fiction and nonfiction. But my recommendation, if you want to get a broad overview and appreciation, read Common Sense 101.
Oh, that is awesome. It's so cool to see somebody that has such an appreciation for Chesterton and Lewis. I studied in England in 2009, and I had I was lucky enough to meet Walter Hooper, who is in charge of Lewis's estate and everything, which was really, really cool. So we got to go and look at a lot of his old books and stuff like that. So,
totally. Did you go to the kilns?
I did get to go see his house. It was really cool. I'm in email contact with Walter now. He's in his mid-80s, I think, at this point, but awesome guy.
Well, I've got to ask you one other question, because I'm a big fan of Lewis and beer both. So did you drink at the Eagle and the Child? Or the Babe and the Bird, as they used to call the pub, where I think I reversed the official name, but that's where Tolkien and Chesterton and all the other great intellects would meet on a regular basis to drink beer and discuss life.
It's actually funny. On the 4th of July in 2009, I was hanging out with a few priests, and we had a bit too much to drink, and we're singing the American National Anthem in the Eagle and Child, and we're asked to leave because we're a bit too rowdy.
Well, that's quite a feather in your cap to be kicked out of that pub, so good for you.
Awesome. Well, Mark, do you have a quote that's really led you through your success?
Well, I'll share with you one quote and one principle, if you will, because I'm not sure it was exactly a quote, but the principle that served me well is that discipline is the ability to do what needs to be done even when you don't feel like doing it.
Awesome.
I think we're often victim to our emotions or our energy levels. And if I only did things I felt like doing, I wouldn't do much because some days I'm just not highly motivated. But I've developed, I guess maybe because I grew up on a farm, the ability to do what needs to be done. I will give you one quote from Chesterton that I dearly love. Chesterton said, "The world will never lack for wonders, only wonder."
Wow.
Saying is, if you, you know, I was taught my kids, if you're bored, that's your fault, not anybody else's, because boredom is a choice. You know, we live in a world full of wonders, and if you're bored, you've just ceased to wonder, but there's no less to wonder about.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, what one book's had the greatest effect on your life?
Well, I don't want to sound cliche, but I mean, the honest answer is the Bible. That is really foundational to my own belief system.
Mm-hmm.
I read a great deal. I probably read or skim at least 100 books a year, and at one time had a library of something like 4,000 plus books. But if I had to narrow it down, I would definitely say the Bible.
Awesome. Well, as an entrepreneur, what's the greatest difficulty you've struggled with?
You know, probably one of the greatest difficulties, and there have been a bunch, but one of them is that need to have everybody agree with me. You know, when I first started to write, I was always discouraged if I got a bad review or somebody didn't like my work. Well, first of all, if a bad review can be good feedback. Sometimes in a bad review, there's a gem of an idea you can use to get better. Very often, though, we live in an age where people just kind of resort to a personal attack and they don't give you anything you can use. They just don't like you and your work. And so mm-hmm. I was talking to my friend John Maxwell, and John said, "You know, Mark, I write books to help people, so I don't read the reviews." And I really have grown in my ability to say, I'm not perfect. I do goof up fairly often, but I, for the most part, always do my best. And if somebody else doesn't like it, there's a lot of people on the planet. My wife loves me, but she doesn't agree with everything I say or do, so why should my readers? So I would say that need for universal approval is something that will get in the way of any successful endeavor, whether it's being an entrepreneur or being a writer or being a speaker.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I know our listeners as well as myself, this is something they struggle with a lot, is shutting it off. Have you found ways for yourself to be able to do that?
I have, but I don't always try to. One of my goals early on was to have a business that I so enjoyed that I wouldn't begrudge when it bled over into my personal life. Now, the only time that can become problematic is A, when it affects relationships with my wife and my sons. Because work, I was, like most people, really bad at letting business interfere with family time. And so when that happened, what I learned is the only way I could deal with turning it off was literally to turn it off. Turn off the phone, get away from the computer. If we were having a family dinner, not have the TV on in the background, because I'm easily distracted. And so I find the best way to focus is to get rid of as many distractions as I can.
Awesome. I find myself and my wife now, when we go out to dinner, we end up putting both our cell phones in her purse and not even looking.
That's a great idea.
Totally. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, what would that be?
I would say relax. I was always pretty driven, and I think that served me well. But I think that there's a fine line between being driven and being tense. And although I was hyper concerned with doing a good job and the performance that I was turning in, I think there were times that my performance would have been a lot better if I'd have been a little looser. So I might tell my younger self, hey, don't take yourself quite so seriously and relax a little bit.
Awesome. Well, Mark, we're coming in for a landing here. And one of the things that really matters to me is that people have different definitions of success. What is success for you?
Well, for me, success is coming as close as you can to fulfilling your God-given potential. And if you're not someone who believes in God, then let's just say fulfilling your potential. That is making the most of the skills and abilities and potential that you possess and really answering the question how good you can be. Because I believe we all know how good we've become, but none of us know how good we can be. That's why I don't think it's really necessarily literally possible to fulfill our potential, because who knows what we're capable of. But I think that pursuit of potential is, to me, what success is a big part of.
Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the Create Your Own Life podcast today. Where can our listeners connect with you?
Well, the mothership is marksanborn.com. We have four websites and, of course, are present in social media. But if people really want to know the jumping off point, a lot of free resources. I blog. I make a lot available in the way of ideas. That would be where I would start, marksanborn.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Mark.
It's been my pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Wow. So Mark Sanborn really was awesome on the show today. I think we learned a lot of things about how to actually lead people, and not only lead them, but inspire them. And I think that's the biggest thing really missing in modern leadership. So I hope you guys got a lot out of what Mark had to say today, because Life Creation Nation, I really want to see you guys create the life that you really want to create. But in order to do that, sometimes we need a little bit of push in the right direction. I think that's a lot of what Mark was today. So I really encourage you guys to check out the show notes over at jeremyryanslate.com, as well as checking out Mark's book, You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader, because I think that's really going to be a big jumping off point for you guys to figure out how to really lead and inspire people. And that's going to help you to not only build the business you want, but really build an organization that actually affects the world on a larger level. So guys, have an awesome day today, and be sure to tune into us Friday for our interview with John Lee Dumas, talking about setting goals and really winning with them in 100 days. So have an awesome one, everybody.
So I just want to let you guys in on a little secret that tripled our social media following in just 7 days. Social media can be a huge asset to promoting your brand or product, and is part of doing business in a new millennium. It is time to start. iBoom Media, founded by Justin Matthew, not only gets real followers, but real results. Call iBoom today at 877-223-9552 or go to www.iboommedia.com.